shattering this. Yesterday I promised that we would begin a series that followed along the path that Yahweh has provided to our salvation. But I even feel a bit uncomfortable saying that, and that I don't want to mislead people that Yahweh created a plan of salvation. He really didn't. And Kirk, good to have you back.
Good morning.
When I say that I'm uncomfortable saying that Yahweh created a plan of salvation, when clearly he saves his children, you have an understanding as to why I'm uncomfortable talking about the seven-step plan as a plan of salvation?
Because it's not a tent meeting, for one, and number two is he didn't set up a thing to save you. He set up a thing to introduce himself to you so we could get to know him, and then that's a byproduct, not the aim. The aim is to get to know him and to love him.
Yeah, that's funny. When you said it's not a tent meeting, you're showing your southern Christian roots where they would set up a tent revival meeting, and then try to lure people into the religion with promise of salvation based upon knowing absolutely nothing, admitting you're a sinner, and accepting the gospel of grace by faith. Complete rubbish. It actually is a tent meeting, though, is the reason I was laughing, because that's what Tabernacles is. We meet in.
Well, that's true. But, that's the context of what the Americans have done with it.
Yeah, I know. It'd be a really big tent that he has. It happens to be the entire universe. Actually, it's larger than the universe. I don't know if you were able to I know you were able to listen to much of what Ron had to say, but that was pretty profound, wasn't it?
Well, can I comment on that?
Just, sure.
I was already convinced about the 6 days thing, and I know that when you get all the numbers in sync, it will come out that way. I have no doubts whatsoever. Right. Now, you're just fighting over the stuff. But Roy is brilliant, and he's my new favorite Roy. He's replaced Roy Rogers. and you can tell him I said he also replaced Smokey Dawson. You know Smokey Dawson?
Yeah. No.
Now, Smokey Dawson was the Roy Rogers of Australia and a friend of our family, so he'll get
connection. Yeah, Roy listens to the archives of the program, so he'll hear this. He'll hear it will be his tomorrow. It's the middle of the night there. But what I thought Roy did is provide us some very profound perspectives on creation and on who Yahweh is, what his relationship to the universe is, what he can and cannot do, and how so many myths have been based upon absolute impossibilities. And it just makes it so clear to understand when it's presented as well as he's capable of doing.
Well, it was helping me it's very hard to think of beyond what we are to what we're going to be. I started thinking about that much, much clearer. It's hard to think out of your own dimension, but he certainly put enough out there that is clearer, if I can say.
That his analogy of Flatland, which is the analogy that I've used in the past and used yesterday, of Mickey and Minnie Mouse being created in a two-dimensional construct by Walt Disney, who's a three-dimensional construct. That gave us great insights. It's just that he took it further. You and I view Yahweh as very approachable, as an individual who wants us to know him, to love him, to cozy up next to him, to go off on great journeys of exploration with him, just spend quality time together. And it's very difficult to view someone as your father that wants to spend time with you, and also view them as being substantially large enough to create the universe. Those two do not go hand in hand, because my mind can't wrap around 100 billion galaxies averaging 100 billion stars, and that representing 5% of the universe and the energy required to make all that happen. Well, I can't relate to that.
No.
It, the God capable of doing that without diminishing himself, it doesn't equate to the same approachable father figure that we read about in the Torah.
No.
He resolved that.
But you can start to glimpse a little bit of what Abraham got to see.
Yeah, but yeah, true. Absolutely, because Yahweh took, when Abraham didn't understand what he was inheriting, Yahweh took him to these very stars that he created and explained, here's the dimensions beyond where you have been, and here's the energy beyond where you are. And then he says, oh, now I get what I'm inheriting. But when you recognize, if you take this, the mental journey, mm-hmm. a journey in your mind, of Flatland, the cellular film of Mickey and Minnie Mouse,
right,
being created by Walt Disney, and you understand how to Minnie and Mickey Mouse only having the amount of energy and capability that is possible in a two-dimensional construct, having no ability to see their creator, having no ability really to interact with their creator unless their creator provides the means to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can interact, and it's the capability of Walt Disney is infinitely beyond the capability of Mickey Mouse. Infinitely.
Oh, yeah.
And so it would be impossible for Minnie and Mickey to even fathom an entity capable of creating their realm plus all of that beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And yet if you make the transition, if you're unable to make the transition from two to three dimensions, then Mickey Mouse isn't going to see Walt Disney as unapproachable, as unbelievably large, but instead as, wow, we're the same, really. You made me like you.
Mm-hmm.
It resolves that conflict between so enormously large as to be unapproachable,
right,
and yet the transition he's going to perform on our own life will make us such that we'll be just like him.
Yeah, it's a beautiful picture. The negative side of it is, I was thinking, you know, the ultimate side below the two dimension is a one dimension, which is a dot.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and there you have the black hole.
There you have the singularity.
You can see how,
right,
how from this dimension, from a third dimension, if you want to go down that road with Paul,
yes,
3D becomes not a 2D. You're not even a stick figure anymore. You're right down to a dot.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was Roy's conclusion, Carl, analysis, determination, that rather than height, width, and depth being the first three dimensions and time being the fourth dimension, that he views time as the first dimension.
Yeah.
It is the singularity. And he does that because what he has done, he's gone from atheist to agnostic,
mm-hmm.
to a member of Yahweh's covenant family, the same way we all have by studying Yahweh's testimony. And he says, if I re-engineer this, if I go and I take what God said and I apply it to what we know to science, says, I think I can understand the construct that he created. And what you find is that the first dimension created is time.
Mm-hmm.
And he then said, you know, if you reduce those who are religious, those who are leading people away from God and the fallen spiritual envoys known as demons,
mm-hmm.
if you reduce them to a lightless prison, which they cannot escape, where their consciousness exists for all time, but there is no movement, he says, then time has to be the first dimension.
Yeah, I heard him say, I kind of understand. Well, that's a pretty good explanation of it.
It's a beautiful explanation of it. And then these other dimensions came into being as energy coalesced into matter, right along the description that Yahweh provided. But it also explains what really happened, as you mentioned, with Abraham when Yahweh was trying to explain the covenant to him and what he was inheriting. It also explains that what Paul wrote, which I always thought was stupid, but, you know, when we're religious, we believe stupid stuff. where Paul wrote twice that the fullness of the Godhead resides on him bodily, speaking of the physical being of the person who's come to be known as Jesus. That's impossible. You know, if the fullness of God resided in our universe,
it'd explode.
It would destroy the universe, much less just our planet. And so it's a physical impossibility, and so it's when you say something that is physically impossible, you know it to be untrue. Well, he explained why it's impossible. It's a three-dimensional construct can set apart a portion of themselves, infinitesimal part of themselves, to enter a lesser dimension realm. But that's really all they can possibly do is to. Is to set apart part of themselves to do this. And that explains what Yahusha was when he says, I'm a diminished manifestation.
Right. Got it.
Yeah, set apart twice. Yeah. Hi, Glenn.
Yeah. Kirk just hit on something. First of all, these discussions always have the, I always chuckle when I compare the way experienced physicists talk about this sort of thing as opposed to, you know, us as sort of laymen kicking our concepts around like blind men trying to describe the elephant. But, you know, like even Roy was, careful to talk about the inherent problems of things, you know, getting kind of esoteric when you're trying to, you know, use language to describe them. We're within, you know, we're creatures within dimensions, you know, with energetic and material bodies trying to grasp that which is inherently beyond our ken, you know, so obviously we're going to be somewhat bumbling when we wrestle with this. But Kirk hit on one thing that was very interesting, which was when he mentioned the geometric point. I've reasoned through this, you know, innumerable times, wrestling with it. And, you know, Yahweh is one. He is, you know, I thought about this, and it's like the only oneness that we can come down to, and is, you know, to us, the singularity is the geometric point. It's dimensionless. It's theoretical in nature. And it's just, it stands to reason that we should hit such a, you know, should crash into such a limitation. But Yahweh is transcendental consciousness, you know.
Yes. But, you know, even if Roy is right, and time is the first dimension, and Yahweh is one, which he is, then he is without constraint in time. He's pointing us right back to all eternity. I exist.
Right.
I am. Haya.
Exactly.
Welcome back. Kirk.
You have a question?
What verb did Yahweh use to introduce himself to Moshe and thereby to all of humanity?
Haya.
And by using Haya, he said, I was, I am, I will be, I exist. He is, in fact, introducing himself as the singularity, as being literally an expression of time. Now, can you, I'm sure you don't have this in front of you, but I'm positive you can do this. What is the picture painted by the three letters that comprise Haya? As a matter of fact, it is actually E-Haya because it's the first person of Haya. Mm-hmm. I was, I am, I will be, and the first person is expressed by a yod. So I'll give you, I'm going to spot you a yod before you get to Haya, and you can tell me what that picture's.
Well, it's still a high. It's still a hey, hey, yod, hey, a yod, hey.
Yeah, it's a yod, hey, yod,
works
hey.
Works both ways, eternally. Any way you turn it.
Right, and so the yod is what?
Yod is the hand reaching down.
All right, to lift us up. And what's the hey?
And the hey is the two people looking up at him, beholding greatness.
Right. Reaching up to him, right?
Reaching up to him, yes.
Standing up and reaching
up
to him.
Ready to walk, able to move.
And you have two of them, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Yod hey, Ihaya. Mm-hmm. I was, I am, I will be. I exist. And those four letters, you have a repeat of Yahweh's reaching down and out with an open hand to lift up those who are now standing and reaching up and paying attention to him.
Sure. You have,
That's the basis of his name.
Yes. And we covered Barak pretty good on what he's doing there, too, reaching down to lift us up. So
exactly.
Yeah, if I may, I'd like to make one more comment, and then I've got to get in my way when work schedule's trying to kill me here.
Sure.
You know, it's funny. I keep coming back to this, the juxtapositioning of this concept of the geometric point as our conceptualization of a singularity versus Yahweh as a conscious and singular. We can't imagine... We, because of our space-time limitations and our consciousness limitations, our limitations as creatures, we can't comprehend. We can never be in God's shoes, we can never imagine what it was like to be Yahweh before he created. So I stipulate to the transcendental nature of that, that it's something I can't beyond my comprehension, is now and always will be, even in a glorified state.
It is beyond your and my comprehension, though only from the point of view of complete understanding. We've been given by Yahweh a set of instructions that provides tremendous insights. It's just that the insights he's provided, it's very difficult for us to assess anything further.
Right.
That's
okay. We're inherently limited. We can never know what it is to be Yahweh prior to creation. And so the mental picture, the metaphor, the construct that works for me is the, picture, Yahweh is pure consciousness. He is the I am. He was I am-ing when we weren't. He created, my picture of creation is that Yahweh created the dimensions as the framework in which to place the rest of his creation. And then, he then placed energy and matter and, in his creation. And so he goes from the conscious one, creates the dimensions, and then within those dimensions he places energy and he places matter and he creates earth. So that is not befuddling. We are so easily befuddled when we start playing around thinking about space and time.
He has to create is he has to create the energy within the dimensions, and the energy then coalesces into matter, and the matter coalesces eventually into an earth. So the second thing he has to create is the language of life.
Right, and the laws of nature. The laws of nature that make all that happen.
The construct that he created is regulated for sure. And it's an amazing calculation. It is, it's well beyond my imagination, but with the insights that have been provided by Yahweh with I Am One and Haya, combined with what Roy shared with us, and how we can extrapolate reasonably from that, it's enough to bring you goosebumps in terms of understanding and appreciation.
He created to relate.
Absolutely. It is amazing to me that God created us in a dimensional construct where he provided us this extraordinary planet, extraordinary capabilities in terms of individually, of our ability for mobility on our legs, our ability for dexterity with our hands, our ability to observe with our eyes and with our ears, our ability to process information with our brains. And this capability of commitment and feeling and of love and of being able to respond in free will to all that he has offered and in this roadmap that he has provided. And when you begin to see God as outside of the universe that he created by necessity, but yet offering us a covenant which he has demonstrably told us. And this really makes Kirk, the statement that he made to Abraham, all of a sudden now just screams. That's why you began this program saying you want to talk about it. Is that when Abraham was complaining, I don't understand what I'm inheriting in this covenant. I don't have a kid, and was down there, you know, in the amongst the rocks and the bushes, and couldn't see beyond his toes. Yahweh lifted him up and took him to the realm of the stars and to the spiritual realm and said, this is what I'm taking you to. And can you imagine the experience of being taken beyond the constraints of three dimensions and seeing that?
Well, I'd like to think I could. I probably can't. You know, it's way beyond.
Yeah. Well, but that's what he was presenting, and he's telling us exactly what Roy described.
Mm-hmm.
We're being taken out of Flatland.
Yeah, that's Roy's good.
Yeah, but isn't that and it's the reason that Yahweh can destroy this existing universe, which he says he's going to do,
right?
And then create another one with us as witnesses, is because when we're taken to him, we're now apart from the universe. We're not destroyed when the universe is destroyed. Thank God the Christian myth of bodily resurrection is untrue, because if it were true, we would be dependent on the dimensions, and this wouldn't even be possible.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question about language.
Sure.
In this context. You know, people like Roy in the physics, people study physics, they talk about a micro universe and a macro universe and so forth. And we've been looking at words and words and these symbols that make up the words in the original language. They have obviously tremendous depth any way you look at them. Is that the language that's in all the other dimensions?
Words?
Or is there another language? I mean, do the symbols, when we obviously communicate in all these things, is that something that...
Yeah, just think that, you know, energy is what is used and transformed to create matter, and matter is comprised of quarks and leptons and of nucleuses and electrons and protons of atoms, and then atoms collectively form molecules, and molecules then bond together to form the material world that we are witnessing. And so you have a macro and a micro realm in the universe. We're really in the midst of a universe that is retreating inwardly, almost infinitely inwardly, and almost infinitely outwardly. And we're kind of right in between this micro and macro realm. And you can see that there are specific building blocks that are used to comprise the things that we're able to observe. And then in words, the same thing's true. You've got the strokes of these letters comprising images that comprise the words, that comprise the sentences, that comprise the overall thoughts and then understanding. Same thing holds true in the language as holds true in the material world. And so your question is, do you think that will continue to be the same in eternity? Will we?
Yeah, I mean, is it translating the other dimensions? Because who knows? But I mean, it's just I was just thinking about it, because his word lasts forever and it never goes away. And then what form does it take?
And and when he makes his Torah, his teaching, an integral part of our nature upon his return on Yom Kippurim in year 6000 Yah, 2033 on our calendars. April 2nd, for those who were wanting to know the exact time, 6:20 p.m. in Jerusalem. For him to do that, since we are at that moment eternal creatures, his word has to be eternal. And so the basis of his word, thereby extrapolation, would be eternal. So, I strongly suspect that we will be speaking and writing in Hebrew, and that we'll be learning in Hebrew. You know, most people are unaware of a concept. I did share it in Yada Yada. You've read Yada Yada, so you've come across this. But I was talking about the importance of words, and I said that we think in words. Words are literally the building blocks, the glue of the components of thinking. We think in words. So we come to understand by way of words. We communicate in words. We form relationships based upon words. Words are really the catalyst that makes everything possible. Without words, it all goes away. We are no better than the slug that eats my flowers here in my garden. Words are are essential to all of this process. So the very fact that we think in words, we communicate in words, we relate in words, would tell us that words will be one of the medium that continues for all time. And Yahweh says his words will be everlasting. And since he communicates in Hebrew, there's every reason to suspect that it'll be the everlasting language of communication and of learning. One of the things that Kirk, I always get miffed when someone, and I've had close friends that accuse me of making a religion out of words, you know, getting so specific, not being willing to use words that are tainted by religion, and trying to get to the core of what Yahweh communicated. But that is what we will be doing in eternity. If you don't like that, you're not going to like Yahweh. You're not going to like eternity. And if you do like that, chances are, you're going to be part of his family.
Yeah.
You know, as we were talking about this pathway that God has provided to being part of his family and living in his home and spending eternity with him, which is not the plan of salvation. It's his father does save his children. But it's the plan of relationship. And Scott, who is back on the board today, but feeling under the weather, you don't want to hear his voice. It's pretty sickly here today. But he says, you know, what it basically represents, each of these seven meetings, is that God is holding a party with everybody he knows. He's invited everyone he knows, and everyone he knows is attending that party. It's like if you were to throw a party and everybody you know, everybody you care about, is there. There'll be no one at the party that God doesn't know and care about. And everybody that he knows and care about will be at the party.
Great party.
Yeah, so it's the ultimate tent meeting, because the party is everyone who is part of his covenant family.
I'm ready.
So I do want to talk a little bit about the path to him. You know, we could spend forever just talking about the insights that Roy provided. And Roy, by the way, I don't think is a scientist. I just think he's a very thoughtful individual who has come to know Yahweh, loves to do research, loves evidence and reason, and has used his great skill in this regard to help us all understand. It begins with these words, Kirk. It says, "And Yahweh spoke these words to Moshe." In order to say, please convey the word of God on behalf of the children of Israel. So he's introducing Pesach, Passover.
Mm-hmm.
And Yahweh, whose name is based upon that verb, Haya, that the Yod and the He and second He. You know, the only difference in Yahweh's name and the verb that he used to help us understand his name is the addition of the very thing that makes the tenth possible, the tent peg.
Right, tent peg.
Right. Which speaks of increasing, securing a family, and protecting a family, increasing the size of the home for more members of the family. It's the only thing that is beyond Haya in his name, the very enabler of the tent, the peg. And Yahweh, and then we have Dabar Moshe, La Amar Dabar. And then we have El Yisrael. So we have a pattern here that's very similar to the pattern that we saw when Yahweh spoke to Moshe and said, I want you to have Aaron bless the children of Yisrael by saying these words. It's again a repeat of Dabar and Amar and even La Amar.
Mm-hmm.
So let's share. And it begins with the same law. So we've got the tent peg.
Right.
To increase and secure the family, Yahweh. And then it's Dabar.
Mm-hmm. So you've got doorways and word and the words, and you've got Moshe drawing out and the set apart spirit or life with the M, and I mean all the ones that we covered before are all repeated over here
right.
again.
Dabar, yeah.
Reckon you
the left is the working. Is the doorway, right?
Yeah,
and the right. And it's not the doorway to it's not a trap door here. This is the doorway to the Bayeth,
right? To the family home.
The family home.
Right.
And it's a doorway to the family home, not for everyone, but for the Rosh.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who are observant.
Concentrating, yeah. Observing, yeah.
Yeah. Who use their eyes and ears to observe and then process that information in their brains so that they can articulate their willingness to accept the terms and conditions of the covenant. So the very word of God is a depiction of what the purpose of the word is.
Mm-hmm.
For us to observe what God has shared with us so that we find and enter the doorway to his family. Beautiful.
Right.
And he spoke the word. The person's name that he chose to convey this to us was named Moshe. And what does that name mean?
That's good.
It name means to draw out.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Draw out, of course.
Yeah. And what was Yahweh drawing us out from? I mean, it's the story is clearly told.
No matter where he's drawing out from, it's always oppression and enslavement and religion and politics.
Yes. He's drawing us out from the world of human corruptions.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's drawing us out from. We'll be back. As God was introducing his first invitation to meet with them, he began with, and Yahweh spoke these words. He shared the location of the doorway to his home for those who are observant.
Have you thought about, you know, Moshe with, of course, Moshe is basically life with a calling out with words to these people standing up. You know, it's
right.
No coercion. There's no coercion there. He's just, everything he does is with words convincing you that this
right.
is a better plan, and
yeah.
take it.
It's not, right. Yeah. It's from Masha, and it's words which are bring life and cleansing, the mah, the for or mem, for water, and for those who are paying attention, looking up, reaching up, standing up
but
to
it's,
God. It's not for those bowing down to him.
No, it's nothing coercive. It's nothing Lord-like. It's not a command. I mean, this stuff has to go.
Yeah.
You know, this.
Yeah.
Silliness.
You know, I saw bits and pieces of Kings and Gods, the you know, most recent Moses movie, and they did say his name right, it's Moshe, but they never did bother to explain what it means.
Hmm.
And you know, it's profound. The name means to draw out, and he was drawing people, the children of Israel, out of the most religious and political and economically and militarily flawed place on earth. And the name Mem Shen He is, you know, words which bring life and cleansing to those who are observant, who are standing up, reaching up, and paying attention.
Yeah, they have a different, they have a definite frame of mind. They're just not people, they ain't people just lying around doing nothing.
Right.
I mean, they,
and you know, truly, Yahweh, through Moshe, only led those willing to walk
yeah.
out of slavery. If you weren't willing to walk, you didn't get out of slavery. And so the letter that ends his name is the hey. So it was those willing to walk. And then he conveys, please, convey the word. Well, first of all, before that, it's in order to approach, this is law, in order to approach by promising, this is law amar. Well, profoundly important. He's Yahweh wants us to be able to approach him, law, through amar, which is the
words.
Yeah. And again, amar, very similar word. It has two of the letters that are repeated here. Cleansing and life-giving for those who are observant, but it adds the A to it, or Amar. And it's written two different ways, with the Ain and the Alf. One is pay attention to the Lamb, the Ram, the leader of the flock. And the other is, this is the visual manifestation. Use this for your perspective so that you can observe and understand. The drawn is a. So plea, and the law that preceded it, which is to approach, well, that's a shepherd's staff.
Right.
Used to save, used to guide, used to take care of. And this is, please convey the word. We have a repeat of Dabar.
Dabar, uh-huh.
Yeah, of God on behalf of, this is El, Bene Yisrael.
And we covered that pretty good on people striving with and wanting to be with and pursuing Yahweh.
God. Right. And the children who, and Ben is such a great term because Ben is the family home, Beth, and the sperm, the child with an inheritance of Yisrael. And so was this message for everyone? Did God say, I want you to tell everyone in the world this?
Well, it certainly wouldn't hurt, but I don't think they're going to listen.
That's true. But this was directed at those who engage and endure with God. And so, if you don't want to exist and endure with God, then there is no reason you need to listen to this.
No.
Right?
That's sad but true.
Yeah. So, God provided the means to approach Him, to get to know Him, to camp out with Him for all eternity. But the message is for those who wish to be children in His family. And then he said, and so you should literally and completely convey to them that these godly appointed meeting times of Yahweh, which are set apart, invitations to be called out and meet, shall be continuously proclaimed by you as they are my godly appointed meeting times.
And Moed's a great word, too.
Boy, Kirk, I don't want to... Pick up this
tomorrow.
Yeah, pick up this tomorrow. That is a statement that has got treasures
throughout. Look forward to it.